from the United Nations headquarters in New York. This is Disarmament Today.
Hello and happy International Women's Day. I'm delighted to welcome you to the United Nations for Disarmament Affairs podcast. I am Rebecca Jovan. I'm your host today and also the senior gender focal point in the office. I'm delighted to be here and to extend a warm welcome to our very special guest, Ms. Izumi Nakamitsu, the UN Undersecretary General and High Representative for Disarmament. Welcome, Undersecretary General. Delighted to have you here today. By means of introduction, Undersecretary General Nakamitsu has been serving in this role since May of 2017. Prior to assuming her current position, she was the Assistant Administrator of the Crisis Response Unit within the United Nations Development Fund. She has a very distinguished career, both within and outside of the United Nations. I will not go into the details, but suffice it to say, her work spans both headquarters and field-based assignments with the UN. She has worked in academia as well as in the research community. She is a well-known quantity within the disarmament field, and we are really fortunate to have her with us today.
Thank you, and happy International Women's Day.
So we're celebrating International Women's Day today, but actually 2020 is a milestone year on a number of different fronts. So, in fact, we're celebrating this year the 25th anniversary of the adoption of the so-called Beijing Platform for Action. That was the outcome document of the 1995 International Women's Conference, which is really the foundational document that speaks to the issues of women's equal and meaningful participation and women's empowerment, and still is today. The other anniversary we're celebrating this year is the 20th anniversary of Security Council Resolution 1325, the first resolution adopted by the Security Council that makes that connection between women's participation and peace and security. And finally, what we're celebrating this year as well is the 10th anniversary of General Assembly Resolution on Women, Disarmament, Non-Proliferation, and Arms Control. So really the only standing resolution of its kind that makes that connection around gender and women in the specific field of disarmament, non-proliferation, and arms control. So with your permission, if we can launch right into the conversation.
Well, thank you, Rebecca. Indeed, it's a really important historic year, as you mentioned, Beijing, women, peace and security, women and disarmament. I think before we get into why this is important, I would like to also remember that women actually have traditionally and historically played very important role in peace and security and in particular in disarmament movements. I often use this example of 1963, the year I was born actually, which is a year after the Cuban Missile Crisis of 62, at the height of a really tense period of Cold War. Women were really instrumental in making partial Test Ban Treaty, which was concluded in 63, only a year after the Cuban Missile Crisis. And then, of course, anti-personnel landmine ban treaty, also, more recently, international campaign to abolish nuclear weapons, which really was instrumental in the making of the treaty on the prohibition of nuclear weapons. All these movements, in fact, have been led in the civil society by strong, capable and visionary women. So let's try to remember that this is, it's not an exception that women are being talked about in the movements to make this world a safer and more secure place. But we have actually been doing quite a lot. So the first importance that I would like to point out is that we can make a difference. We often talk about women's meaningful and equal participation as an important moral imperative. But indeed, it is an operation necessity, as the Secretary General calls it. If we, together with all these women, we can make greater impact and we can actually achieve greater results in those movements. So that's why, in my view, this is an issue that is really important. And then we have 2020 as a landmark year to shed light into these important issues.
No, absolutely. You've pointed to the Secretary General and some of the things he's said on this issue, including referring to the issue of gender parity as both a moral duty and an operational imperative. What do you think has really changed as part of both his tenure, but also more historically, having mentioned some of these past disarmament processes? What have you observed in your role?
I think it's very clear, it's very visible that ever since this Secretary General took his office, we are already making quite a lot of achievements in gender equality, gender participation area. I mean, one could, of course, say, you know, since the founding of the United Nations, which is almost 75 years, it took 75 years, but with a very clear vision coming from the top leadership, you can achieve results very quickly also. So that's a very important thing to remember. I think in the field of disarmament, with the launch of the Secretary General's disarmament agenda, which takes up this issue of women's role in disarmament in the fourth pillar of partnership for disarmament, the Secretary General has committed himself to achieving gender parity in various mechanisms and bodies that is established under his auspices. For example, groups of governmental experts established in 2019, last year, on the basis of the GA mandates and member states nominations, we have achieved gender parity. Secretary General's Advisory Board for Disarmament Matters, which has, 15 members, 7 are women and 8 men. Last year, a very popular program called Disarmament Fellows, Fellowship Program. In fact, more than 60% of people who were trained in that program were women. So I think it's very clear that, with the vision and the leadership and commitment in these areas, we can actually make very quick progress that can demonstrate that what we mean actually happens, what we say actually happens. But of course, there are still a lot of more things that we can do and then we should be doing. One of the difficulties in this issue is, as the Secretary General says, and then he also said it in his recent speech at New School, gender inequality is a question of power. When the power distribution is involved, it gets very difficult, it gets very complicated to address those challenges. So there are a lot of still room that we need to work. I would say we need to redouble, triple our efforts to address the gaps. And then I think we need to do it with a renewed commitment and vigor in our actions.
Thanks, Izumi. That's really interesting. You referred to some of the actually quite encouraging statistics that are out there that show certainly there is a broad pool of disarmament experts that from different diverse backgrounds. This seems to kind of contradict a lot of the rhetoric that we hear out there, namely that there are no women, for example, that work in disarmament. When you get those kinds of comments from people, what is your typical reaction? What do you say as a counter argument?
I think we hear less of that. But when I hear something like that, I always just go back to the facts, facts of how things actually are. One very important, practical experience I had, for example, in the process of establishing these groups of governmental experts in disarmament field, when we actually seek and reach out to various parts of the world there are indeed quite a lot of experts, very competent, very capable and very strong women who really should be brought into those processes. The reason is that they, you know, I'm 100% convinced, and I have actually seen it with my own eyes, because they really can contribute so much into these discussions. So there's a substantive arguments and facts about how, you know, there are so many women out there who really should be taking their rightful places and making their serious contributions, because the substance matters, and if they can, you know, make the world a better place, why not take advantage of their capacities and capabilities? But the reality is, you know, the UNIDIR, our research institution focusing on disarmament and international security issues, have done a very good study, you know, still behind the curve. And they have actually looked at, you know, various statistics and did compiled a very good outcome of their research. Only about a third of diplomats in multilateral disarmament meetings are women, and the number drops even further for heads of delegations, and many delegations also include no women at all. What should we be doing about this? Again, as I said, if we pay just a little bit of extra efforts, there are women out there, women capabilities that can make contributions into these discussions. So, you know, it logically, we should be making those efforts to reach out and find those. So let's make sure that we would not be discouraged by this counter-argument that we don't have good female experts. The reality is quite the contrary. And I go back to the Secretary-General's remarks, which is that gender inequality is a question of power sharing.
Right. So what do you think? I mean, you mentioned already some things that your office can do, that the UN can do to ensure that some of these bodies do reach gender parity. What are some other thoughts that you have on increasing women's meaningful participation, whether it's actions by the UN or by member states or other partners? I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to make sure that we continue with, you know, intensified and also systematic efforts to address this underrepresentation. The key word is really to make the efforts really systematic, with a numerical commitment and targets, with a very rigorous and serious monitoring mechanisms. We need to constantly monitor and follow up whether these commitments are in fact fulfilled, and making sure that there is effective measures to, you know, make sure that it is complied with. So, you know, all sorts of systematic efforts to continue. I think we also need to have, you know, a thinking about creative and even a radical shift in the balance of power, and in combination with other initiatives of inclusion and efforts for equal opportunities, I think, you know, we will probably begin to make some sustainable and systematic changes in front of our eyes. So I think the key a key word here is to make sure that diverse perspectives are brought in. It's not just the, you know, balance of power, but it's also about making sure that diverse perspectives, I mean, we will be benefiting from diverse perspectives that these gender equal participations can contribute. Maybe, you know, we should encourage member states to have some sort of a gender parity pledge in a similar way that the United Nations have made, the Secretary General has made the pledge for gender parity. It's no longer just an increase of representation and participation, but the Secretary General has always used the word parity, and sometimes even reminded us parity means parity. So that kind of a clear commitment and pledge coming from the member states will also be quite important. One thing that will support this argument is that in the civil society, and when we look at, you know, civil society organizations, non-governmental organizations, and I mentioned, you know, these strong women leadership in civil society in the disarmament fields. You know, half of NGO representatives to MPT are women, for example. I see a lot of strong women, in fact, working and leading civil society organizations in the context of disarmament discussions. So I think it is the governments that should take, you know, a closer look at how they are doing, how they are sending women delegates, how, you know, they might be letting women to lead their delegations. Again, it will, I would argue strongly that it will be the governments that will benefit from such diverse leadership and representation amongst their delegations.
Right. So there's definitely, it sounds like, quite a few good practice examples out there, and definitely a lot of scope for us to look at different partners and learn from them. And, you know, amidst some of the progress that you've mentioned, one of the things the Secretary General and others have talked about quite a bit is there is, at the same time, the reality of a backlash against women's rights movements. We are seeing that at a global scale. At the same time, there are certainly countries, and you mentioned the key role of member states in here, there's certainly countries out there that have come forward, you know, very strongly in support of these issues, including several countries that have adopted a so-called feminist foreign policy. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on, you know, how this applies in the disarmament field and how you feel, you know, a gender-responsive disarmament approach or vision would look like amidst this environment that we're in.
Yeah, you know, the Secretary General always says, "I'm a proud feminist," and I think it's a wonderful statement that he keeps making. I'm a proud feminist myself. So how can we bring these perspectives into a specific field of disarmament, which is international peace and security? It's a you know, the other side of a coin called international security. As I said, it's a moral duty, but also operational necessity. I think having more women, you know, coming into this area will improve the kinds of qualities and discussions in tackling the root causes of insecurity. I think that will be, you know, that will mean that we will all benefit from, you know, more women coming into this field. I think we also need to make sure that, you know, recognizing, you know, the impact or gendered impact of different kinds of weapon systems, including impact they have on the prevalence of gender-based violence, this will also absolutely benefit from more women, in fact, analyzing and discussing and participating in decision-making processes. Again, evidence is quite rich that, you know, various weapon systems, different weapon systems impact men and women differently, boys and girls differently. So, you know, we are all in the evidence-based policy-making policies in this regard. All this will probably amount to also making sure that we benefit from various diversity in you know, perspectives and opinions. It's not just gender, but diversity matters. There are quite a lot of good evidence, body of evidence, that suggests that diverse perspectives, diverse participants in decision-making processes, in fact, improves the quality of decisions that are being made.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for sharing that, Izumi. What I'd like to dig a little bit deeper on some of the points you just mentioned around the gendered impact of weapons. I think that's quite interesting. Maybe we could talk a little bit about some of those specific areas. I mean, I know, for example, the Security Council has been looking at the issue recently of how small arms and light weapons impact the peace and security field that you've just mentioned, and specifically some of the issues around the impact on women and girls that might be different from that of on boys and men. So can you speak a little bit more about the work of your own office in the area of gender and the whole women, peace and security agenda that really revolves also largely around that connection?
Right. I think we all know, at least in the UN system, that gender is a very useful and in fact very important analytical perspectives to examine the impact of conflict and armed violence. You know, I worked in peacekeeping many years, and it is very clear how, you know, insecurity impacts women in different parts of the world. So I think, you know, gender perspectives brought into disarmament and arms regulation field is absolutely key. And in order for us to start having better analysis, we need to have better data sets collected. So we are, for example, starting a very big project funded by the European Union to collect evidence in this regard. And that, I think, will definitely shed light more in terms of how gender is, in fact, impacting, you know, various fields of specific fields of disarmament. In particular, of course, the relationship between small arms and light weapons and gender-based violence, but not in this regard. And that, I think, you know, this is a huge issue on crime prevention, violent crime prevention issues as well. So, you know, I have a big hope that we will be able to contribute much more concretely through better data collection, informing better sort of evidence-based policymaking, and therefore start tackling the broader women, peace and security issues. It's not just a disarmament, but I think we need to work together, you know, gender specialists, experts working in disarmament fields, working together much more closely with broader women, peace and security experts, because we share the objectives, definitely.
Great. And I know we have another big event coming up quite soon, and that is the review conference of the parties to the Treaty on the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons, or the NPT. That's going to be taking place from the 27th of April to the 22nd of May here in New York. So that's going to be looking specifically at the nuclear disarmament field. What do you think we might be able to see in terms of gender-related issues coming out of that conference? What's your hope for the NPT review conference when it comes to gender?
Yeah, well, first of all, I hope that there will be, you know, strong women representation at the NPT review conference, including in leadership roles, you know, heads of delegations of various states parties, of course. I think also dialogue and discussions about the importance of equal participation in the context of NPT has fortunately grown in recent years. I hear many strong women who have been working in this area, you know, consistently raising awareness on these issues, and there are talks of some important, you know, side event gathering women, etc. So I think, you know, these will also contribute to substantive outcomes. For example, on gendered impact of nuclear weapons, there are some really good studies about how nuclear weapons impact men and women differently. Those things absolutely are critical considerations when we are looking at how to try and achieve a world free of nuclear weapons. You know, in other disarmament instruments, such as the Arms Trade Treaty, you know, there have been some really good, encouraging developments. We should use those good practices and use those good practices as a guide for more concerted action across the different arms areas of disarmament. And I hope this will also be you know, applicable to the forthcoming NPT review conference as well. And I will absolutely make sure, as an international gender champion, you know, it has a disarmament impact group, and I will support and participate very actively in their efforts to identify, you know, these gender impact issues as a key issue for the NPT review conference as well.
Great. Speak to me a bit more about actually your role as an international gender champion. What does it mean to you?
Well, I mean, I take it very seriously. I you know, consistently talk about this issue. I don't shy away about, I mean, not just my own commitment of making sure that gender representation, meaningful representation, will increase in those various disarmament fields. I always, you know, encourage others, including member states, to do the same. There are some member states that take those issues very, very seriously, and there are others that are kind of lagging behind, and I, you know, I need to make sure that they also come along and you know, fully embrace this issue as their priority, and that requires constant talking and encouragement, reach out to them.
Right. Let me take you back, if I may, to something you mentioned earlier, and that was around data and evidence base. And, you know, as we move increasingly into a digital world, I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on how that reality is also affecting both the work of your office as it pertains to disarmament, but also more generally what that means when we look at the issue of gender in the context of a digital environment in which we operate.
Yeah, you know, we are all moving into, or we are probably already living in a data-driven society. And I think it's, you know, it's very clear that these big data already have gender biases or gender blindness. So we need to really start tackling those issues very seriously. You know, the gender biases in AI voice, face recognition, risks associated with, you know, deepening and sort of perpetuating stereotypes, you know, of a female image and male image. I mean, all these things could potentially really, you know, sort of make the gender bias more of a permanent existence in the society. So we absolutely need to tackle that now. Otherwise, all the efforts that we have been making, in not in the virtual world, but in the real world, and making quite good progress, will be negatively impacted. So for me, tackling those gender issues in the big sort of data, AI, the new technology field, is absolutely key. And this is not just a future issue, but I think it's becoming a current challenge as well. There's something else also, which is that, you know, people often talk about lack of female capacities in cybersecurity. There is already a lack of human resources in cybersecurity field, but that is most acutely felt in terms of lack of female capacities. And that is related to still quite low, you know, female participation in the STEM field, scientific and technology field. So, you know, if we are really serious about those workforce shortages that we have and that we'll also continue to have into the future, we have to invest quite a lot in girls, you know, more getting into STEM field. We need to have some concerted education support to create future workforce human capacities as well. So I think these are very important issues, especially I would like to encourage young people to really embrace and own this, because this is something that is affecting and that will affect the world that they will be living in, they are living in. So our initiative, for example, Youth for Disarmament, I think those are the initiatives that that can attract young people, and I would very much like to work with them. I should say I should learn from them about concrete solutions, potential options for solutions from younger people, because I think they probably know much better than we do when it comes to these issues.
How about within your own office? Can you tell me a bit about how you've been addressing the issue of gender parity within the Office for Disarmament Affairs? What changes have you seen? What are you encouraged by? What work still remains to be done?
You know, if you look at across the board, I think we are about a parity level. But, you know, the commitment at the UN, you know, system-wide is that at all levels we are to achieve parity. So we have a very concrete plans and we are working on, you know, on these plans to achieve gender parity at all levels. And, you know, we, according to our plan, we will achieve parity at all levels earliest in 2023, and at the absolute latest, 2028. And this is within the time frame that has been set by the UN system-wide commitment. And we are absolutely monitored, you know, at the Chief Executive Board. You know, the sort of scorecard is always released to heads of departments and agencies. So UN system is really monitoring very, very rigorously how we are and you know, how we might be behind the curve in terms of the implementations. So I am absolutely committed to achieving the targets, or I should say I have no other options but to achieve the targets.
So do you have any specific advice for women working in the field of disarmament, any words of wisdom, especially for the younger generation of women entering this field?
Yeah, a couple of things. I think one is, you know, they need to believe that they can do it. And indeed, the reality is that they can do it. They really need to believe that they can contribute. And indeed, they contribute. So that belief and self-confidence, having, you know, confidence in their capacities and their future success is absolutely key. If they can believe in that, then they can network, they can find role models, and, you know, together they can make more efforts to, you know, coming into this field, and I think the world is definitely waiting for them to make the contributions that they can.
How about men? How do men you see the role
well?
As men in this whole question
no,
of disarmament?
Men as well.
And
I mean, you know, without men also taking these issues as their own issues, we cannot really change the world. You know, I don't believe in divisions between various positions. On the same token, I don't believe in, you know, men and women being divided. This is, in fact, a collective endeavor, collective efforts. Men and women should definitely work together to make the world a safer and more secure world. And for that, I think man's understanding, acceptance, and cooperation and encouragement is absolutely critical. And I also encourage young men to getting into this field because it's a very exciting field to work in.
Great. Well, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us today. That's quite a lot that is going on in your office and on the world stage on this issue. So thanks for celebrating International Women's Day with us today and looking forward to continuing the conversation.